It's Central Time. I'm Darrell Conner.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, fentanyl is the top drug in overdose deaths, bypassing heroin. We talked to an emergency room doctor to understand what's behind this change.
First, the new crop of state lawmakers and other elected officials will take office in about 3 weeks. That includes Democratic Attorney General-elect Josh Call.
He defeated Republican incumbent Brad Schimmel by fewer than 18,000 votes, or less than 1% in last month's midterm elections.
He'll assume his role with less power than the office had last week after several Republican bills were signed by Governor Walker. Among them, eliminating the Justice Department's Solicitor General's office, allowing lawmakers to intervene in state lawsuits, and requiring the Attorney General to get the legislature's approval before settling cases.
Josh Call is the incoming Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin. Attorney General-elect Call, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the extraordinary session of the legislature and what came out of that when it comes to the powers of the Attorney General. What's on your mind when you look at that now?
Well, first and foremost, this is terrible legislation. It was passed through a really bad process. The bill was introduced on a Friday afternoon, and it was passed the next week after an all-night session. I don't think this legislation has been thought through as well as it should have been. But there are some significant problems with it. One is it takes resources away from the Wisconsin Department of Justice. That's not good for public safety. Another problem with the bill is that it reduces the powers of the governor and of the attorney general. It's really an attempt to undermine the results of the elections that we just had. I think one of the things that is sure to result from this legislation is that there's going to be litigation relating to different with respect to the AG, for example. I think there's going to be the AG or the governor's powers, potentially arguments about separation of powers. You know, one of the things that this does is it gives the legislature oversight over certain settlements, which, you know, the enforcement and resolution of an enforcement action is a fairly classic executive branch power, but the legislature with this legislation has tried to take that power.
You said there's going to be litigation. Is there going to be litigation from you?
I'm going to wait to comment on that until I am in the AG's office. But I think regardless of who brings litigation, there is certain to be litigation over these issues, because this is a significant shift in the way that our government is organized. It's a significant shift of power away from the executive branch to the legislature. And this is not how the transfer of power has worked literally for generations in this state or in this country. After elections, you know, part of our democratic process is that the full powers of the office are transferred if there's a transfer of power from one party to the other. And unfortunately, that's not what happened here.
Well, one live issue from all of this is in the news this week, the Affordable Care Act. We had a judge in Texas saying it's unconstitutional, going along with a lawsuit filed by 20 states, including Wisconsin. Now, you are limited now under this new legislation in the state from pulling the state out of that lawsuit as it advances probably to the Supreme Court. How do you handle this?
So this is a good example of one of the problems with the extraordinary session legislation. In the campaign that we just had, I campaigned in part on talking about the need to withdraw Wisconsin from this lawsuit. Governor-elect Evers talked about the need for Wisconsin to withdraw from this lawsuit, and he called on Governor Walker to direct Brad Schimmel to withdraw from the lawsuit. This was an issue in the campaign. At no point did somebody say, oh, we may very well be changing the powers of the governor so he no longer can order direct the AG to withdraw from this suit. That's something that only came up after the election took place. It's really made that debate that we had in these elections into a sham, and that's one of the unfortunate aspects of this legislation.
Another big issue that's going to be coming up in the next year and beyond is the issue of Wisconsin's voting maps, redistricting here in the state, this ongoing federal trial. We've got a trial set, I think, for April now on the latest incarnation of that. The assembly is going to be allowed to have an attorney to make the case for these districts. You'll be in the mix somewhere. How's that going to work?
So generally speaking, I think the role of the attorney general is to defend state statutes if there is a reasonably defensible legal argument to be made. Now, one of the things that we need to look at is with this new legislation that's been passed by the legislature, you know, when is the legislature going to be intervening in cases? How does that impact the role that the AG's office plays and that the legislature may be playing? But generally speaking, the AG's role is to defend state statutes, even if the AG disagrees with them. And so as AG, one of the things I will be doing is defending the state's legislative maps. I also think it's appropriate, though, to speak up when there is room for positive policy change and policy improvement. We are spending money litigating over these maps. We're now going to have not only the AG's office, but also lawyers for the legislature involved in defending these maps. And it's not a system that is the one that best serves the interests of voters. I would like to see Wisconsin move to an Iowa model where we have a nonpartisan redistricting process so that voters, once again, have control over our democracy. We have voters choosing their representatives and not the other way around. And so we're saving the state money that can be put to more important uses.
Talking to Josh Call, Attorney General-elect of Wisconsin, looking at the recent extraordinary session and looking ahead to 2019. And let's do more of that now. One of the big issues in Wisconsin on the campaign trail for you is the opioid crisis here in the state. In just a couple days, we'll talk to John Nygren, one of the leading Republican lawmakers on this issue. He's backed a lot of pieces of legislation. Do you see room where you and Republicans in the legislature can work to combat the opioid crisis?
I do, and I think there are actually a lot of public safety issues on which members of the legislature and the AG's office are going to be able to work together. The opioid epidemic is one great example, and I'll also add to that the growing meth problem that we have in Wisconsin. I think there are a number of things we can be doing that will help us respond more effectively to the challenge that we face here. One is, as AG, I'm going to work with law enforcement agencies at the county and local level and also at the federal level to try to improve coordination so that we can work together to target large-scale drug traffickers with our investigations, people who are transporting meth or heroin or fentanyl, you know, across county lines, across state lines. I'm going to be an advocate for expanding access to substance abuse treatment in Wisconsin. I think that's part of the solution. One of the things I'm going to be doing as AG is taking a look at where the multi-state investigation is into the pharmaceutical manufacturers, because I think we need to hold them accountable to the extent that they've been responsible for the opioid epidemic through false and deceptive marketing practices. And then one other area is we still haven't expanded Medicaid in Wisconsin. If we do that, we'd be able to cover about 80,000 additional Wisconsinites under Badger Care, which means that more people would have the coverage they need to pay for treatment, but we'd also save the state about $190 million a year. And we can put that $190 million to use in a number of areas, but including, for example, expanding access to treatment.
I've talked to first responders, police officers, firefighters, EMTs, who, especially in the areas harder hit by opioid than by meth, as you were mentioning, they say, my job is different now than it was 10 years ago. So many of the calls are to administer Narcan or something else related to an overdose. How do you, as Attorney General, really help support those people at the front lines of this?
So there are a few things. I talked about some of the sort of big picture things we need to be doing differently, but I think there are a lot of additional things that are important to be doing as well. One, as you just mentioned, is making sure that Narcan is available to law enforcement officers around the state so that they have it, so that they can help save lives. Another thing is making sure that we have the resources at the county level we need to start, making sure that cases are prosecuted with the attention that they deserve. So a good example of that is working to address our prosecutor shortage in Wisconsin. I also want to expand treatment and diversion programs in Wisconsin so that when people end up in the system, the criminal justice system, because they have, for example, a substance abuse problem, we can work to get those people the help they need rather than having those folks end up in jail. I think that's good both from a fairness standpoint for the folks who end up in the system because of an addiction, but I also think it's important from a law enforcement and a public safety standpoint, both because if we can deal with that person's addiction, I think we're going to be safe for the long term. And also because I'd like to see more law enforcement resources being able to be directed toward higher level drug traffickers, for example.
Also want to turn to the issue of school safety, a high profile issue in recent years because of rare but very dramatic and horrific school shootings over the last handful of years. What are your thoughts in 2019 on what you can do to make schools safe?
I think there are two major areas where we need to make progress. One is we need to pass common sense gun safety measures in Wisconsin. Universal background checks have very broad public support. I'm going to be an advocate for universal background checks in Wisconsin. I think we finally need to ban bump stocks in Wisconsin. And I also would like to see a red flag law, a law that would allow law enforcement or a family member, if they see somebody who, you know, demonstrates that they are a danger to themselves or to others, this would allow for law enforcement or a family member to go to a court and get an order allowing for that person to be temporarily disarmed so that an intervention can take place. So that's one area. The second area is we need long-term funding for mental health programs in our schools. And that's another area where I intend to advocate for more funding from the legislature.
We've hit a lot of the high points here. What other priorities are on your to-do list over the next 4 years?
One area is, first of all, I want to work with the legislature to pass legislation that is going to do what we can to prevent there from ever being another backlog of untested rape kits in Wisconsin. And I look forward to working with members of the legislature, with law enforcement, with advocates for survivors to enact that legislation. We also have kits where their kits were tested. There have been DNA matches in going through the testing of kits in the backlog. And where there are those matches, I'm going to ensure that those matches are fully and thoroughly investigated so that if prosecutions can be brought, they are brought, and that we finally get justice for survivors in those cases. So that's a major priority. But we also need to step up enforcement of our environmental and consumer protection laws at the Wisconsin Department of Justice. There are parts of the state that face significant environmental issues, and making sure that our laws are being seriously and even-handedly enforced is a priority of mine.
Attorney General-elect Call, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Josh Call is the incoming Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin. We talked with him about the new laws that scale back his office's power, the future of the Affordable Care Act, and other issues. He'll be sworn in on Monday, January 7th.
Coming up, the synthetic opioid fentanyl is the most common drug when it comes to overdose deaths. A Wisconsin emergency room doctor tells us why fentanyl has become such a common cause of death. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Darrell Conner. Coming up, music in 2018 saw a wave of successful female songwriters and a renewed love for pop sounds. We'll listen to some of the year's best songs and ask for your favorites.
Now, fentanyl was the most frequently used drug in overdose deaths in 2016, according to a new report from the Centers for Disease Control.
Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid that's approved for relieving severe pain and typically advanced cancer pain. The CDC says that it is 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine.
According to the report, oxycodone had ranked first in 2011, and heroin was the leader in drug overdose deaths up to 2015. Fentanyl overtook heroin the following year, and the rate of drug overdose deaths that involved fentanyl and similar drugs doubled annually between 2013 and 2016.
Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency room physician at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. Dr. Eberlein, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, why has this shift happened with fentanyl bypassing heroin as the top drug most involved in overdose deaths?
It mostly is related to supply and demand. The heroin was, it started off with the oxycodone, and then, as you mentioned, it moved to heroin. And as heroin became more difficult to get on the street, for many factors, one of which they're able to mass produce fentanyl because it's purely synthetic, so they don't need to grow the poppy plant, and which are much easier to find, obviously, and destroy. So they're starting to produce these very strong synthetic opioids and then ship them in.
What is it about fentanyl that makes it so dangerous?
It really is related to the potency of the drug. People tend to buy heroin. They on the street, it's referred to as a point, and that's usually one point is usually what they use to inject. And you have a drug that's 50 to 100 times more potent, and you get the same physical quantity of that drug. Then you've got 50 to 100 times of the opiate in your system, and it causes an overdose. And unfortunately, frequently when you're that big of an overdose, it causes death.
Let's break this down and talk about opioid use in general. For our listeners, what does opioid use look like?
As far as who's using or the overdose, because who's using, we're seeing all walks of life abusing and using these opioids. There is tends to be a peak death in the 30s and 40s, but I've had people come into the ER overdose from their early teens all the way up into their 80s. So this is something that's really going across the spectrum in our society right now.
What about when you were talking about overdose, but what about when fentanyl is part of the mix? Is there a difference between that and other drugs, other opioids?
From the actual physical effect of the opioid, it is the same. You get the same decrease in respirations, the same altered mental status. It's purely just a dose-related.
Does Narcan work when it comes to dealing with fentanyl or other synthetic opioids as it does with non-synthetics?
It works, but that too is dose-related, so we're seeing an increased usage of multiple doses per patient. In fact, that's really what triggered us locally here in La Crosse to realize something was stronger in the area, because I talked to the paramedics that I work with frequently, and they had mentioned we're using two, three, four times as much Narcan per patient than we had been 6 months to a year ago. And wow. So that's a trend we've seen over the last several years. But Narcan does work, but you may need multiple doses or increasingly strong doses to get that opiate reversed.
When you were on the show back in August, you said that you didn't think we'd peak yet when it comes to the number of deaths from the opioid crisis. And at that time, a CDC report of preliminary numbers show that more than 72,000 people died from opioid-related overdoses in 2017. So given what you see as part of your work and what the numbers tell us, how concerned are you and how concerned should we all be?
I'm still very concerned. We're still seeing, in La Crosse, we'll see 29 deaths at least so far this year in our community, and that's the highest we've had. It is continuing across our country. To this point, I still don't think we've quite hit the peak yet. I think we're starting to see a little bit of a slowdown, at least I hope, but there is a lot of work to be done to get a handle on this epidemic.
Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency room physician at Gunderson Health Systems in La Crosse, and we are talking about the dangers of fentanyl as well as opioids. Now, you talked about a possible slowdown. What type of progress have you seen when it comes to pushing back against the opioid epidemic?
Well, we've made major progress how we look at these opioids from a medical standpoint. When this epidemic really took off in the early 2000s and then 2010 and before, we noticed that 80% of these heroin addicts started by abusing prescription pills, and they switched over to heroin and injectable. Whether they wanted more of a potent drug or they couldn't get their oxycodone, OxyContin, so maybe it was supply and demand, it's hard to know. But a lot of that was related to poor prescribing practices, and we've done a very good job really ratcheting back and figuring out the best ways to work on someone's pain. We have a long ways to go. There's no doubt about that. But at least now the default isn't always, here's your narcotic. Now it takes more time to work with a patient to figure out what's really going to work for them. But that's really where the future lies, and that's really where a lot of our impact has been made in the last 3 to 4 years, between the prescription drug monitoring program and looking at other treatment modalities for people's pain.
So what are some of the challenges that the opioid crisis, and fentanyl in particular, what some of the challenges they pose to communities?
Well, it's incredibly costly to a community. Not only are people dying, but you have big law enforcement costs. You've got a lot of people that are incarcerated for this. And then you've got people that have all sorts of other sequela, whether it be injection drugs are very dangerous from the standpoint people get abscesses, they get bacteremia, which is bacteria in their bloodstream from it that ends up seeding heart valves, and they can get abscesses in their brain and their spinal cord. So incredibly costly complications from that standpoint that aren't often talked about. And then in addition, you have all these people that need treatment. It's so much cheaper to be on the prevention side than the treatment side. And that's really where we have to focus a lot of money, as well as prevention. But now we've got this backlog of patients that also need treatment. So this is going to be a very expensive problem to solve. We're working on increasing medication-assisted treatment programs, and we're working on getting residential treatment and detox facilities throughout the state, but they're expensive, and they take a lot of resources and a lot of community commitment to get those up and going.
So what does this mean for medical professionals like yourself? How does that impact you and folks like you?
Well, it's changed our practice a lot. It's changed how we view pain management, how we're treating pain, and then how we're dealing with patients that are addicted or dependent on these drugs to try and make sure that we can start routing them towards the right place to get the care they need to get off of some of these medications. And then you've got that subset of patients that I don't want left behind, that, you know, there's always a concern that these patients that need some narcotics can still get them. So we're walking this fine line, and I don't think we've quite found that median yet. We're getting there. I think we're getting closer. But we got to make sure all of our patients are taken care of.
And finally, what resources are available in Wisconsin to help people who are dealing with opioid addiction?
Well, there is a lot of treatment facilities out there. I would recommend that you contact your primary care provider and help them start to help you navigate the system, whether you think it's most appropriate, you need medication-assisted treatment, if you need, you know, like a peer review treatment or more intensive inpatient. And that's part of the challenges of opiate addiction, and there really isn't one pathway to healing on this. It's going to vary for every patient, and that's why it's a little more complicated than a lot of other diseases out there, because you really have to focus and manage that individual patient.
Thank you, Dr. Eberlein, for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency room physician at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. He joined us to look at a new report that says fentanyl is the drug most often mentioned in overdose deaths.
Coming up after the news, we'll look back at the year in music, including some of Wisconsin's best bands. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Conner. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Conner. Coming up, we talk to a law professor who argues that the explosion of megacorporations like Amazon and Google leads to growing inequality, populism, and nationalism in the United States. He says it's time to use the century-old laws meant to keep big companies in check.
First, 2018 is coming to a close. Grammy nominations are out. Holiday songs are all over the radio. So it's a good time to take stock of some of the year's best music.
Our guest says that some of the most exciting work this year came from female songwriters, and that critics were rediscovering a love for pop music. He also brought some of his favorite songs of the year to share with us.
Justin Barney is the music director for 88.9 Radio Milwaukee. He's with us now in our studio. Justin, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me back, man.
Before we get to particular clips, and maybe this is a hard question to answer, I don't know, but was 2018 a good year for music? Did you feel like we had a bountiful harvest?
Every single time, you know, we get to a new year and I'm like, is this going to be the year that time forgot? And sometimes you get through the year, you get to the end of the year and you're like, what happened?
What happened?
Yeah. And then I go through and I was making my top 10 and I'm pulling records off the shelf. And I'm like, for making my top 10, I always pull out the albums that I like bought this year so I can have a physical look at all of them. And I'm pulling album after album after album. And I'm like, I have 30 albums here to make my top 10. So yes, it was a good year in music.
One of the big trends you saw this year was a wave of great songs from female songwriters. What were some of the things that stuck out to you as far as their work is concerned?
I think for me, women really dominated a lot of the music in 2018. I mean, not only in my personal list, I made my top 10 list, but then checking everybody else's, it just seems that it was like 80-20 women to men in all the critics' top 10 and 20 albums of the year. I think women writing songs and singing songs, it's hard to tell exactly where that comes from, but No matter who you slice it, no matter whose list you were looking at, it was women that dominated 2018.
Well, let's jump in on that, because the top album and song on your 2018 list is from Lucy Dacus. She put out her second album this year, I understand, called Historian. Before you give a listen, can you tell us a little bit about what you like about her?
Lucy Dacus, she came out with this album in 2016, and she was on my radar because she had this song called I Don't Want to Be Funny Anymore. And I thought it was like an interesting song title, an interesting take. And then this song came out, or the album Historian came out in the middle of the year, and I listened to it. And I was like, this is solid. And then something happened, and it came around at the end of the year, and I took another listen, and it was just like every single song was so heavy hitting. Every sentiment was a bit nuanced. Every all of the songs had an original thought in them.
Let's give a listen to one of those songs, Night Shift.
In 5 years, I hope the songs feel like covers. Dedicated to new lovers. You got a 9 to 5, so I'll take the night.
Wanted to let the beat drop there so it didn't sound just like a ballad. This also rocks a little bit.
Yeah, that song, Night Shift, it's really two songs. There's like the beginning, and I talked to Lucy Dacus about this, and I said, you know, what's going on with that song? It's two songs in one. And the song, is she was like, I was writing about this relationship, and I got halfway through, and I was like, I'm frustrated and angry about this too. And then in that part, you hear like the guitars come in, and it has these four lines, and there's something really satisfying about learning the lines of a song and then singing them. I had a moment with that album where those four lines came, and I wrote them down so that I would memorize them as I was listening to the song. And then I was like doing my laundry, and I just went outside on KK in Bayview, and I just yelled along with all the words of that song. It was a very therapeutic moment. It was great.
Mitski is another female songwriter who's gotten a lot of attention this past year. Before we listen to a clip from her, what was it about her sound that's gotten people so excited?
Mitski started, she was put on my radar two albums ago. She released an album, great title, Bury Me at Makeout Creek. And then she released Puberty 2 2 years ago, that kind of had all these songs that had this kind of a slow boil. Again, these big guitars with distortion. And then she released Be the Cowboy this year, which it really took critics by storm. It's on everybody's top list. What stands out for me with Mitski is that she really wants it. There's really a desire for her to be successful in music and to have and create this thing that she's proud of. She's got this song Geyser that starts it, that talks about she's got this swelling in her, and that swelling geyser is this like desire to be successful in music and this desire to be proud of this thing that she made. And Be the Cowboy itself is like, be that energy, that the cowboy that walks into the room and owns it. And I think she manifested her own destiny here and became the number one album for a lot of critics.
So let's take a listen to the song. It's from her latest album. This one's called Me and My Husband.
I steal a few breaths from my eyes, with my body, with me.
That's Mitski, as we talk to Justin Barney from Radio Milwaukee, looking at his, we'll get to at least some of his top 10 list, plus some Wisconsin picks for the best music of 2018. Let's move on. We're just jumping around your list here. I hope that's okay.
Yeah.
Super Organism, the band. Let's go right to a quick listen to them, the track Something for Your Mind.
For us, the bourgeoisie, so carefree. Remember when we? I don't know why you need to get by.
Something for your mind.
All right, a little zany there. What's Super Organism all about?
Nobody is having more fun making music than Super Organism. I talked to the lead singer, Orno, who is 18 years old, and she just graduated high school. She was born in Tokyo, and she moved to Maine to go to high school. And I was asking her how she brought this band together. And she was in high school. She's watching YouTube, and on YouTube there's like the sidebar that has related videos, and it was for this group from Australia. And she clicked on them. She really liked their music, and then she was going back home to Tokyo, and they were going on tour in Tokyo, and she went to the show, and then after the show she sent them a Facebook message, and they met up, and they like had coffee together, and then she went back to high school in Maine, and she said, you know, send me some songs to sing over. And then they sent her these songs that had these like crazy samples, and there's these like rubber band bass in it and stuff. And she wrote the lyrics, and she recorded them in one day, and she sent them back, and that was how Super Organism started. And
wow.
I saw them play in four different states this year because they are that amazing. And Orno, I mean, she gets up to the microphone, and they have the microphone set at the lowest it can, and she just barely gets to the top of it, but she owns that stage like she is 10 feet tall. They have so much fun and bring such a great live show, and just have fun making music.
Now, I'm an old school
sure.
hip hop fan. I'm a huge fan of hip hop, and mm-hmm. I'm curious about this next artist who is from Milwaukee, who seems to incorporate jazz and gospel
yes.
into hip hop. Cameron Henderson, better known as Lord Freddie. First of all, what kind of things is he addressing in his music?
Lord Freddie is from the north side of Milwaukee, and he rocks the north side. The album is called North, N-O-R-F. It's the ballad of Hot Ronald, and the stuff that he's addressing is the stuff that happens on the north side of Milwaukee. He is addressing the crime in that area, the things that he sees between police officers, and what, you know, his experience as a black man on the north side of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
He is talking about his own relationships that he has. You know, he has a child, and he talks about having, you know, paying child support and loving really, truly. Every time I'm with him, he's with his baby, and he is just such a loving father. I love seeing those two together.
You know that North is an industry term, right?
Is it?
I'm just kidding. Oh. Here is here's Lord Freddie's song, Sanctified. And
I tell myself even God had patience, and every evil spirit done not say. Thousand words worth 50 our lives. Mother lover, you ain't heard Photoshop.
Lord Freddie there from Milwaukee, as we talk to Justin Barney, music director for Radio Milwaukee, looking at some of his favorite songs from 2018.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What were your favorite songs or albums of 2018? Were there artists that made it onto your radar for the first time this year? Whether it's songs at the top of the charts or something lesser known that got you excited this year, give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@WPR.org.
We'll pick up that conversation and hear more music from Justin coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Connor.
Right now we're picking up our chat with Justin Barney, music director at Radio Milwaukee, looking back at some of his favorite music of 2018. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What new releases did you love this year? Let us know about your favorite songs and albums, big hits, or something more obscure, or maybe something local. Call 800-642-1234.
Now, we covered hip-hop a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want to kind of move to more of a rock sound. Jeff Rosenstock put out some of your favorite work, from what I hear.
Yes.
This year, his album is called Post. I understand this is a workout song for you. What gets you pumped up about Jeff Rosenstock?
It's a workout song in a weird way that I love listening to sad music while I work out. But it does have a lot of energy. On January 1st of this year, Jeff Rosenstock dropped Post, and I joked that it was my favorite album of the year when it came out. And at the end of the year, it ended up being number two on my
wow.
list. Jeff Rosenstock, he he was in these pop punk bands, like Bomb the Music Industry in the early aughts, and he makes music that is fun to sing along with. And I have been to several Jeff Rosenstock shows on this tour, and it is one of those shows where the crowd is singing louder than he is, and the whole crowd is together, and everyone's like sweating it up in the pit, and it's a fun show to be at. It's got a fun energy to it, and it's just a great it's just great to let loose and sing along with these songs.
Here is the a clip from the song called All This Useless Energy from Jeff Rosenstock.
Kind of anthem-y almost. I could see singing along with that if I knew the words.
Yeah. It's a lot of his music is anthemic and big. And you know, we're talking about my top 10 albums of the year here, and everybody's list is very personal to themselves. Mine is, it's fairly reflective of what other critics have at the top of their list. But one thing that I think of every time at this in the year is that it is my job to listen to music, and I constantly feel like I'm behind the eight ball. Like everyone knows something that I don't. Like, I am behind it, and so it's okay to feel like you're lost as well, because it's my job to know what's happening in music, and oftentimes I feel lost.
That makes me feel better for not keeping up as well as I could. I want to bring out a caller. Javier is on the line in Madison. Javier, hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. Who'd you want to tell us about?
Yeah, I was going to tell you about, there's a Spanish singer that she debuted her album at the end of the year called Mal de Querer, and her song Malamente. She used to sing flamenco, and she takes from that flamenco and mix it up with rhythms of pop, trap, rap.
Ooh.
It's really awesome.
What's the name of the singer, Javier?
Rosalia.
Rosalia. Ooh. Okay, that is something else to add to our list and check out.
Rosalia, that album is amazing. That was at the top of a lot of critics' albums, too. I mean, she really came through with this album, and we've had a lot of music. Like last year, we had Despacito that crossed over, but Rosalia, I mean, she released this album that, I mean, he said it better than I am, but I'm confirming Javier right on. I am with you. That is an amazing album.
Thanks a lot for the call, Javier.
Now, you've also been a fan of Father John Misty for a long time.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
So before we play the clip, what's he been up to on his latest album?
Okay, so God's Favorite Customer was released this year, and in the past two albums, I Love You Honey Bear and Pure Comedy, Father John Misty has kind of gotten a rap for being the loudest man in indie rock. He's got a lot of opinions. He is very verbose. You know, he's gotten in a lot of hot water for just, I think, for people thinking that he's just like pontificating, and he kind of like seems, you know, like he's looking down his nose at everyone. And on this album, he took a step back. He's not doing any press for it, God's Favorite Customer. It doesn't have like a big central message that he's trying to say, but it just shows that he doesn't have to have one giant message to say. Each song stands on its own. Still, just as he is writing, he is like one part Hunter S. Thompson and one part Leonard Cohen.
Oh,
I mean, the guy can just, he writes an amazing song, and a song like Mr. Tillman on this album, you just see the wizardry of his songwriting and the surrealness of it. He's just a great songwriter.
Let's play the clip. This is this song's called Mr. Tillman.
Mr. Tillman, good to see you again. There's a few outstanding charges. Just before we check you in, let's see here. You left your passport in the mini fridge and a message with the desk. Here the picture isn't old, just
I like the unpredictable chord changes. It kept doing not exactly what I thought it was about to do.
Yeah, this album was a reminder for me that Father John Misty's music is both, he's a great songer, but it also just sounds great.
Talking to Justin Barney from Radio Milwaukee. He's sharing some of his favorite songs of 2018. We heard from Eric on email. Eric says, just got on my radar this year, but Milwaukee's own Gold is on his list, specifically their EP Teeth. Yeah, you've talked to us about Gold before, right, Justin?
Yes. Gold moved out of Milwaukee last year, but they are still making big moves. I think they're playing at the High Noon Saloon coming up to plug a show here in Madison. But yeah, great like synth pop band from Milwaukee that they sold out Turner Hall Ballroom last year, and they put on absolutely magnificent shows and are just great music.
Speaking of Milwaukee, we talked about Lord Freddie earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Another Milwaukee singer, Abby Jean. The song is called Isle of Misfit Toys. She's definitely one of the bigger voices on your list. Tell us a little bit about her.
Abby Jean, she has really been coming up in the Milwaukee scene and has been really been embraced. She's got a voice that when you hear it, you hear a lot of weight behind it. You know, she's got a powerful voice, and no matter what she's doing, it comes across. She just released this album called Music Box Dancer, and the music box that she's in is Hi-Fi Cafe on KK, where she was a barista for many years. And I remember going into Hi-Fi and getting coffee from her, and then she's released this album. She's part of Backline, which is a series that we started at 88.9, where we're giving music grants to four musicians this year. And so she's part of this this little startup that we have with musicians. And she's released Isle of Misfit Toys on this colored 7-inch. It's great. She's just got an amazing voice, writes amazing songs, and is bidding, you know, we hope the world grabs onto her like Milwaukee has grabbed onto her.
Well, here's a clip. This is a song, Isle of Misfit Toys.
Isle of Misfit Toys, all the girls and boys living on court scenes, living in old dreams, living in old dreams.
Now, if you told me that this was kind of one of the forgotten artists of the late 1960s, Justin,
yeah.
I mean, the production is a little more up-to-date,
total
but
throwback.
There's a throwback sound in a way there.
Absolutely. She's definitely got that, like, 60s pop feel.
And wasn't Music Box Dancer, wasn't that at all the roller skating rinks back in the late 70s, early 80s? Remember that song? No?
No.
No, it's just me. Okay.
No,
there's a piano song called Music Box Dancer.
Sure.
The listeners all know what I'm talking about. All right. We've got a bunch more on your list. You pick one, Justin. What's one we haven't gotten to? Tell us about it, and then we'll give another listen.
Well, Kamasi Washington is on my list. Is number 7 is his album Heaven and Earth. It's rare to catch a musician who is literally the biggest musician in his genre, literally and figuratively. He's a big guy, and he's got this album Heaven and Earth, where he's taking bits and pieces from albums that he has made and putting them into this one really long album. And each song, they're all jazz, and the way that the instruments come in, it just kind of rises. And you might want to check your feet, Rob, because you might be floating after a minute of listening to this song.
Well, let's give a listen to this is Street Fighter Moss by Kamasi mm-hmm. Washington. Yeah, so this, I gotta say, I should have brought this up because of your list. This was at the top of my list of, oh, I gotta check out this one. This is my Justin's best of 2018 for me.
Love that. Yeah, I mean, he played a show at Turner Hall, and we all couldn't wait to see him perform. He had three drummers on stage. You know, I mean, he just like shook the place, and he is an artist that's at the biggest in his genre and doing the best work that he's doing.
All right, well, we'll leave it there for now. Justin, thanks for joining us and sharing so much great music.
Thanks for having me.
That's Justin Barney, music director for Radio Milwaukee. He was with us for a look back at the year in music, including some of his favorite tracks.
We'd still love to hear what you like this year. Send us a note with your favorite songs or albums. Just email ideas at WPR.org.
And if you check out some of the music Justin shared today, send us a note. Let us know what you think about it. It's a holiday sweater kind of day here at the offices of Wisconsin Public Radio. There's a party going on, I think. We'll miss most of it because we're on the air. But what are you going to do? But yeah, a lot of people, Darrell, wore their holiday-themed, seasonal, Christmas, whatever, sweaters. Are you a holiday sweater guy?
I'm not. I'm wearing a cream color sweater right now. It's probably about as festive as I get. I just don't believe in wearing something like twice a year, and that's what I would do with a holiday sweater, once, maybe twice.
And I'm the same way. And I like wouldn't buy a sweater, and then it's sweater day, and I feel like the office Grinch, right? Because everybody else is, and it's a lot of fun. I've got a great sport jacket out there. I think that wins the day. Dom in his like Christmassy sports jacket. There's a unicorn with a cat riding on it on a sweater. Like everybody's having a lot of fun with this.
They are having fun.
Is there something wrong with us? Are we the bad guys here?
No, I don't think so. I like the sweaters that light up though.
Oh yeah,
I would get that. I would do that.
I don't know. It's a bold fashion statement. Though Judith Sears Poisson, our boss here on Central Time, often fill in host, she's going to pull it out this year. She got like a skirt or a dress that lights up. So that
nice.
She really took it. Yeah, she took the light up holiday clothing to the next level. I think that'll come out again this evening. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.